Welcome to Get Unstuck and Make Shift Happen with Jennifer Grace on Empower Radio, a show to help you get from where you are to where you truly want to be. Now here's your host of Get Unstuck and Make Shift Happen, Jennifer Grace on Empower Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Jennifer Grace, and welcome to today's show. I am actually here in the New York, Connecticut area on my Getting Unstuck tour. So far, we've been to Michigan, Baltimore, did New York City last night. Tonight, we're going to be in Greenwich, Connecticut at Yoga Shmoga. Love that name. And then next week, I'm going to hit Atlanta, Columbus, Ohio, San Francisco, Napa Valley, San Diego. So if you live in any of those cities and you want to get unstuck and enjoy a really powerful complimentary workshop, you can just go to jennifergrace.com and check out the tour dates. And it's all through March and April. So today, I'm very excited. When I had my show on Hay House Radio, this gentleman was often a guest. And so I'm so excited to bring him onto Empower Radio. And he is an author like myself, a native New Yorker like myself. And when I had met him originally, I thought this is kind of like the male incarnate version of myself, only he was Jewish and I was Italian, but that's pretty much the same thing anyway. So he is a dear, longtime friend of mine. I'll have to figure out how many years I know him now, but it feels like a lifetime. His name is Gabe Berman, and he, like I said, is a native New Yorker who settled in South Florida after graduating from the University of Miami. And an epiphany, a passion, and a trail of breadcrumbs led him out of corporate America and into the career he was meant for. After 8 years of writing columns for the Miami Herald, his book, Live Like a Fruit Fly, which is so freaking hilarious, was published by HCI Books and subsequently endorsed by Deepak Chopra. And then his second book, The Complete BS Free and Totally Tested Writing Guide, was written to help artists find their voice. And then he had another book that came out, which was so helpful to me during the time that my father was passing. And it is titled Where Is God When Our Loved Ones Get Sick? And that uncovers the answers to this haunting question. And he has just released his, fourth book, and it's titled Love Looks Like This. His musings can be found on omgabe.com, and I'm very excited to have him on the show today. Gabe, welcome.
Jen, thank you so much for having me on your new show. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I'm so excited. So before we dive into today's topic, which is fate versus destiny, do we really have free will, or is everything kind of fated and destined to happen? So that's going to kind of be our topic. I would love my new Empower Radio listeners to get to know you a little bit more. So let's rewind a little bit from this.
Well, first, let me say this to you. I was all psyched to say something funny and to like start off the show and sound really cool and like actually fit for the amazing intro you gave me. But I was so flummoxed by your producer because he has the most perfect radio voice. Like it sounds like Gabe, all right, hold on. It sounds like he's sitting there with a smoker's jacket with like 1,000 people looking at him, like kind of like Hugh Hefner. And he's like, well, there goes my whole shtick. I'm done. Like he just completely just killed me. So
he just took it from you.
Yeah, he
Remy.
Just took complete
yep,
the,
he'll
the,
do that.
The win. He is just sounds so dapper and like, oh, I am born to do radio. And now let
yes.
me see what you got, kid.
I think Remy needs his own show. I think I'm going to have him on as my guest next week. What am I doing?
He I'm should just take
on
your
a big
show.
Opportunity here.
So where were we?
Where were we?
We're 2 hours
know.
In. 1 hour left.
I think I was asking you about your pre-writing days, your corporate America days. What was that like? What was like the moment where you hurtled over your cubicle and ran screaming for the elevator?
Well, I had so many jobs after graduating college because I just didn't know what to do. I just tried on everything. And usually when you have a psychology degree and you don't go into psychology, you end up just going to some sort of sales or marketing or do whatever you can do just to get by and pay for your car and for your apartment. And I just thought it was normal, although it didn't feel normal. And then one day at work, I was in like my 18th or 50th job, I'm not sure which one. I was just sitting there and I was being yelled at by my boss for doing something right, and she didn't like the way I did it, and it just seemed so like, oh, this is so like typical corporate, I just can't do it. And I said to myself, you know what, I need to live like a dragonfly is what I first said, because I read this thing that dragonflies only live for like a couple of days, but then I did a little research on it and I'm like, it's not dragonflies, it's fruit flies. And I said, you know what, I need to live like a fruit fly, and I kind of just wrote those words down. And I had one of those things that you just keep in your wallet and you kind of look back at every once in a while. Then a few years later, 10 jobs later, I was sitting in a bookstore with my dad, and he kind of forced me to go look at a writing magazine. He's like, stop with all your new age stuff. Would you look at a writing magazine? That's what you want to do. And I'm like, those magazines are ridiculous. So I just to appease him, I just kind of like thumbed through a writing magazine, and one page said what this one agent is looking for is like an idea that can change everything. And I said, live like a fruit fly. And right there, I wrote about a third of the book on napkins in the cafe of Barnes & Noble. And that's how it all started.
And for those of you who don't know, fruit flies only live for 3 days, right?
Yeah, they live like somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 1 day to 10 days. That's usually their lifespan. So it feels like we, as us, live forever. But, you know, you just have to turn on the news and people are dropping every 2 seconds. And we need to live now and not think that we have this whole thing in front of us, because you just never know. The subtitle of the book is Live Like a Fruit Fly, The Secret You Already Know, because we already know it's going to all end, but we just pretend like it's not. And we're like, oh, well, you know, I'll eat healthy tomorrow, which is fine, but you kind of have to start.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting as you describe this book, and of course, this underpinning of death is there. It's a laugh out loud funny book.
Right. Everyone's like, oh my God, you wrote a book about death. And I'm like, well, who wants to read that? It's really not, you can't write about life without writing about death, because what would be the purpose of like really going out there and telling somebody you love them regardless of how they're going to feel about it if you knew that you had forever? There's a point in my book that I talk about how it was like three ex-girlfriends ago, that every time she left the apartment, I would give her the hug, like, this might be the last time I ever hug you, so let me make it good. And I would never say that to her. And I'd give her these crazy warm hugs, and she's like, ugh, I have to go to work. Leave me alone. It's like, I know, like, I'm outside of the fold of, like, the hugs and the I love yous, but you just never know.
You never know.
I talk about my friend. I have a really good friend named Danny, who his dad died out of nowhere with this massive heart attack. And my dad and your dad had cancer and took forever. Yeah. And you just have to watch someone suffer. And Danny and I always talk about, like, what's worse? Like, just losing them out of nowhere or watching someone? Because you and I got to say whatever we wanted to say.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know, like, if the last words are, like, you know, go F yourself. Which, of course, it's not. But, like, he doesn't know where the last thing is.
Yeah.
So it's just true. You just really never know. So that's why I'm like, all right, have your girlfriend look at you like your head's on fire. Just give her that long extra hug, because you really just never know.
Yeah. I love that. And then now, your latest book is out.
Yes, Love Looks Like This.
I love the title, first of all. I think it's, I don't know, very sweet.
And it seems like, oh, it's just like a whole big book of mushy love stuff. And it's almost not at all. There is definitely love stuff in there, but there's so much of it that doesn't have anything like I love you in there. It's just that I named it that. It's because, you know, I walk around and everyone has their cell phones, and I'm always taking pictures of these things that I just kind of see out of the corner of my eye. I'm like, wow, that'd be a great photo to show my friends. And while I was, you know, you're worrying about your life and about what's going to happen next and what happened beforehand and how you feel about yourself and how everyone feels about you. And then you see something so beautiful and all of that stops.
Yeah.
And when you're taking that picture and you're free, like, you can see something beautiful, but still have all those thoughts. And then if you actually like stop to take a picture of it, something like time completely slows down, at least for me. And like, wow, why is this so important? This like 1 second of taking a photo of some like seagull on the beach. It's because like this is, to me, it feels like what being in love feels like. This is like, there is no time. It's like, here's you and I, and here it is being in love. And that's why I named it Love Looks Like This. It's not to do with the love poems. It has to do with that feeling that I have when I'm either writing them or taking the photos. And the biggest thing actually is sharing them, and someone gets back to me, it's like, wow, your three little sentences just made the entire world to me. I woke up in such a bad mood, and now here I am feeling better. So
yes,
that's what it's about.
Yes. So those small, there's poetry, there's photography. Is it color? I ordered mine. Has not arrived.
It's 52, I think 52 photos, full color. And then there are traditional Japanese poems called haikus, which are, first, I had no idea what a haiku was. I just had a feeling that I wanted to write them, so I had to look that up. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to write haikus. Let me just figure out what that is. And they're like in a Japanese kind of calligraphy on Japanese paper. It looks really cool in English, Japanese style.
Okay.
And then there are photos at the end. And normal, I mean, not photos, then there are photos, and then there are sayings that I just wrote that have absolutely no form because, you know, learning one style was enough for me.
So those kind of two-sentence sayings that I've seen of yours before.
Right.
Those are not haikus, right?
No, they're not.
Those are gabisms.
Gabisms. And I have about 1,000 of them, and then when I started collecting them for the book, and I started... I'm like, these all suck. I can't use any of them. I thought they were so great until I looked at them. I'm like, they're all horrible. And then I realized that
they have to
kind of look like a snapshot, like a photo. Like it has to be like, I can't have the reader like think about it. It has to just like osmosis just pop into their head. And then once I thought of that, it was so easy to find the perfect ones. So out of 1,000, I have 20 good ones.
Wow. I'm so excited to own this book.
It's really...
It feels like something I'd want to give is also a gift, but not my copy.
Yes, you'd have to at least buy 1,000 for all of your friends. It feels like... I once heard Billy Joel talking about his songs and how they're children, and sometimes he ends up like favoring certain others. This is by far the favorite thing that I've ever done. It is the loveliest looking little book I have ever seen. It could not have come out more perfect. Like I look back at my other stuff. It's like, thank God I wrote it then, because I never would have been able to write it now. It just happened to be perfect then. But there's always like, I could have done that just to draw better. Like this is perfect. It's like perfection.
I think it's such a culmination of the last few years of your life. Like
that's
as
exactly
an artist, you really took a step back. And I know just from being friends with you, seeing what you do on Facebook, the way you share, and you've really just been this witness to life. You've been witnessing a lot of beauty in nature, people, the good, the bad, the ugly, and just, it's almost like you've been the camera.
I wish this was a radio show so we can go back and listen to it one day. I wish this is one of those weird radio shows that are on the internet so you can go back and I can write that down. Only if we can get up to that technology, I'd be so happy. Because that's exactly what it is. As you know,
Remy's taking notes, don't worry.
Thank God with his voice. He's voice noting, probably. Just as you know, when you lose somebody like so incredibly tragically and horribly, I just had to like, all right, I'm just going to sit back and look at the ocean for a while. And just doing that, like... wow, there's other things happening in the universe. Like life is still happening and going on. Like it's okay for me to look at beauty, and that's where this came from.
Well, it's really been like a living spiritual practice.
Yeah. People always ask me, do you meditate? I'm like all day, every day. Even though my mind might be going a little nuts at times, it's like my life. And I'm not trying to like, oh, you're some enlightened being. Like I'm just, my life really is a meditation. It's constant.
Yeah. And before the show, you were sharing with me about an experience that you had that just kind of came back.
Right. And that kind of, I mean, I don't know, I might be jumping the gun here, but it really ties into where this book came from. For years and years and years, I've been posting photos on Facebook and Instagram and sending them to everyone. And every day, I get tons of emails from saying, when are you going to put out a photo book? And I'm just taking them with my iPhone. So I'm like, that is the dumbest idea in the world. I'm never going to put out a photo book. Like, who wants to see a photo book? And I just would always say no, to the point where I even stopped answering them. I would just give them like a stupid emoji, like, here's my answer to you. And then one day someone just said, when are you putting out your photo book? I'm like, what do you mean when I'm putting it out? It'll be in 3 weeks from now. Give me some time. And I just started going crazy with it. And it was that moment, like my brain just said to me, this is the time right this second. And then I threw in the other poems and the sayings because it all just fits so perfectly. So yeah, that has to do with, feels like your brain is kind of, or something behind your brain is just directing you at times, which kind of goes back to your book. And I had this thing happen to me last summer where I've been striving and searching for like the ultimate answer of life every day, just so I can like reduce suffering for myself, because it's not just my dad. I've been feeling like, you know, everyone feels like the weight of the world, and I've been feeling it since I'm a little kid, and I've been trying to overcome it.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of like spiritual masters out there who tell you how to do something, although they had no work at it. And it's like, how can I do what you did if it just happened to you? It's not fair. So I wanted to be the guy to like kind of figure it out. And then so I can spread the word.
Like the way Byron Katie had an awakening.
Eckhart Tolle, it was a very instant. Right.
What they didn't see it coming. Like they were just bulldozed by enlightenment. And right. There they were.
And then their books tell you, although I love both of them, their books tell you, don't worry about your anxiety. Don't worry about it. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm not going to worry about my anxiety. Thank you very much. I'm in the middle of a Marshalls right now, and people are like thumbing through 80 pairs of underwear, and the noise is so loud, and you want me not to worry about my anxiety because you woke up.
It's like, don't think about pink elephants.
Right. Not that I'm buying lots of underwear in Marshalls, just so everybody knows. It's usually Target. So anyway,
so back to this.
Yeah. So I just worked at it and pushed at it, and it finally just clicked. And after a long struggle, and I was able to like, wow, this is, here it is. And I just had bliss for like 7 days, and it was the longest stretch of complete bliss I've ever had. And which might sound crazy, but if anyone goes back and thinks like, how long is anyone really blissful for, except for those really lucky people who like prance around and they're happy all day?
That's me.
Yeah, right.
I know.
I've always been so envious of you. So then it kind of faded.
No, but that's different than a blissed out.
Right.
Completely in awe of your hand, of somebody's eyelash, of the leaf. You know, like I talked to my friend Ash Ruiz, who had a similar experience.
Who I just spoke to yesterday, which is ridiculous.
You mentioned him yesterday? One person.
Yeah, that's incredible. See, it's all connected.
Well, the crazier part was when you mentioned the seagull on the beach, which was the next thing out of my mouth before you spoke. It was, did you put the seagull on the beach photo in the book? Of course
you did.
Yep. So Ash, great that you spoke to him. Love him. Dear friend. And he explained to me what it was like. And I think like one day, one time in one airport somewhere, I just had this, I love everybody. Like it was complete, no judgment, love of everyone just for like a glimpse. And then it was gone. And that's probably the closest I've ever had to whatever the hell you guys are talking about.
It happened to me so strongly and significantly when I was on the beach, bringing back to seagulls now, that I couldn't even look at them because I couldn't understand how we can all just exist at the same time. Like I was completely overwhelmed. And the crazy thing is I was on the phone with somebody as it happened saying, you know what? I think all those Indian gurus are complete BS. I think they're just very confident and they get a following. And as I was saying that, it happened to me. And then my friend didn't even believe me because it sounded like I was joking, because I was just like, oh, I don't believe in ghosts. I'm like, oh my God, a ghost. Like that's exactly what happened. So that just ties into my book kind of, because I had this experience of like, it's all connected. Like we really are completely out of control, and it's just kind of the universe kind of moving. And that's kind of how my book happened, to like really reduce it down. It's like, I'm not doing a photo book for years and years and years. And then just the universe just said, yes, you are. And I said, of course I'm doing a photo book.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting when that happens, and it's just that moment, and it's like the plates align, and then it's just, of course, yes.
Right.
There
and
it
it's
is.
Allowing yourself to change your mind too. You're allowed to flip-flop. Some things, you know, one day, every moment is so different. So you're not carrying the same mind with you all the time. It's like you have different opinions sometimes.
Yeah. You know, I always remembered one time I was in a meditation group and somebody spoke and they said, you know, life isn't made up of decisions. Life is made up of experiences. And if you go down the path and you're having an experience and you decide that this isn't the one that you want to have anymore, you have every right to choose another experience, and that we need to give ourselves permission more to change our minds, and that that's okay. And I stuck with me.
Change your story.
Yeah. So fate versus destiny. You know, this has been my ultimate question. Like, if I had one question when I died, I want to know, is everything happening to me? Am I creating everything? Or is it a combination of this co-authoring of the movie of my life? Like, this movie that I'm currently starring in, is it just random? Is it being created by me? Is it being created by God, universe, or is it a combination? That is my ultimate question. And therefore, I wrote a book deciding what my answer was, called Directing Your Destiny. And it was all about my choice was my belief at the time, and maybe still right now, if you can convince me otherwise, I'm open to it, is that we are collaborating. We are co-authoring this film. And my case is that I feel that way because I will write down specific sentences, words, scenes even, that I want to star in. And then I find myself in that scene with some of the details are different, but it is so right out of my imagination that I can't not think that I haven't been part of the creation of this current reality. So what do you have to say about that?
Normally,
God.
I would completely agree with you.
That Gabe is God in disguise, by the way.
Right. I hope
so
you enjoyed the scene. I hope you enjoyed the scene.
We did decide that a few years ago that you actually were Jesus.
Well, yes. And I have to tell you, I've been a little bit disappointed in you lately. So if you want to get some presents on Christmas, you better shape up.
I will.
I mean, keep being naughty, but be a little nice as well, and you'll get back on the list. It'll all be fine.
Thank you. So what do you think of all of that?
It's normally I would hear you and I would say, that's exactly what's happening. Of course we're co-creators, and that's exactly where Live Like a Fruit Fly came from. Like, you can choose at any moment to, you want to be a writer? Go do it. You want to be a lion tamer? Go do it. Like, life is short. You have to do it. Who cares what anyone else thinks about you? Like, this is your show. This is your movie, and you have to direct it. So after this thing happened to me in September, everything looked different. And the way I can describe it is, do you know those optical illusion drawings where you see some old, like, scraggly lady, and then you just look at it a little bit differently? It's like some pretty lady with a nice hat on. That's what happened. Like, it was just a little bit of a shift, and things look exactly the same, but it's just a little bit like looking at it differently now. And I am not on board with the co-creating anymore. I'm thoroughly convinced that it's all just happening. And it sounds awful to say that we're robots or pawns or marionettes, but that is where I feel like the universe has been pushing. It's one movement moving forward. But the only thing is that we can argue back and forth. It's like, oh my God, but I write these scenes. And I can say, yes, but that's just all part of it. It's all part of, like you directing your movie is in the movie.
The movie. Well, that's what I was going to say to you. You know,
for this
theory to work, there's like a bigger bubble on top of all of that.
Right. And I'm just saying there's one movie screen now. And I used to think there was like movie screens on top of movie screens. Like, you're watching yourself creating, and there's actually at a point it stops, and then there's just you directing it all. And I would say now that there's just one movie screen. But the good news is, for both of our books and whoever wants to read them and whoever wants to say, you know what, I'm going to get out of bed and I'm going to go to med school today, that you end up having to live like this free will anyway. So it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the answer is, because if you feel directed to go direct your destiny, then you're going to go do that. And if you're not directing the direction of your destiny, it doesn't really matter, because you're still feeling like it's happening. So therefore, it doesn't matter what the truth is. But if you really want to boil it down to get the final answer, like when you die and you wake up, I'm completely convinced that there is no free will, and we are directing nothing. Because the truth is, there's really no us. There's just one universe moving. And it's all connected. It's like, and that's why those little serendipities that pop up. It's like, how would I be talking to Ash yesterday when you were talking to Ash? Yes, we have zillions of friends in common, and the one person that you mention, like, that's just a little glimmer from the movie screen telling the actors, listen, guys, it's just a movie. It's totally cool. To me, it's like Brad Pitt watching a movie of himself and then, like, getting mad or, like, happy at it. It's like, oh, my God, look how cool I am. It's like, dude, you're just watching a movie of yourself. Don't worry about this. Like, we all know how it ends.
You know, it's so interesting. There was a book that I read, actually, during my divorce, and it was called The Disappearance of the Universe by Gary Renault. Have you ever?
And I read that because of you, and it's breathtaking.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we can discuss the disappearance of the universe.
How do you wake up the entire African American community to the hidden issue of mental health problems?
It showed up in my life through one of my best friends, and we've been friends for over 30 years.
Share your story.
If we would have known earlier, you know, we would have been much more supportive with her.
Once I reached out to my sister, it got a little better. Once I told my mother, it got a little better. The more I talked about it, I felt it coming off.
The healing is in me, and the healing in a journey can also be extended to others.
It's our community and our mental health.
Giving voice to what you're feeling is part of the healing.
If you're strong enough to just open your mouth, that's all it takes.
And the most revolutionary and healing thing that Black people can do right now is to love one another.
It's time to share ourselves. Healing starts with us. Search online for stories that heal. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
Before there were computer games and HDTV, cram courses and teaching to the test, there was this thing called imagination. A tool so powerful, it could transport kids on the most amazing journeys of their lives. From outer space to center field at Yankee Stadium. It is for these journeys that Destination Imagination was created, an extraordinary after-school program in creativity and teamwork for every child. At Destination Imagination, teams are formed and challenges are met with a whole lot of imagination. And while we can't guarantee it'll get your kid into Harvard or onto American Idol, we're pretty sure that Destination Imagination will be the most important journey they make this year, maybe any year. Parents, teachers, start a Destination Imagination team by calling 888-321-1503 or visit destinationimagination.org. That's destinationimagination.org.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy? The kitty cat's yelling!
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
This bobcat's heavy! Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Now back to Get Unstuck and Make Shift Happen with Jennifer Grace on Empower Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. If you are just tuning in to the show today, I have author Gabe Berman here with me. We're discussing a little fate versus destiny. And just wanted to mention, as always, if you would love to do some free workshops, get some free toolkits, I always have great free stuff at jennifergrace.com/free stuff. I think there is a couple of workshops coming up about finding your purpose, overcoming anxiety, getting unstuck. And then, of course, there's the Getting Unstuck tour that is going on through the spring. So if you live in Greenwich, Connecticut, Columbus, Ohio, Atlanta, Georgia, San Diego, San Francisco, or Napa Valley, please check my website at jennifergrace.com and see when we are coming to your city for the free Getting Unstuck workshop. And if we don't have your city and you want us to come to you, let us know. So Gabe, are you there?
Here we are.
Here we are. We're back again. The disappearance of the universe. We were just discussing. So you read the book.
Read the book.
And that got me through like the most, that was like my divorce, anxiety ridden, scariest time of my entire life, waking up every morning with like the fear in my throat, paralyzed, like so scared. And the big takeaway, and literally I read that book like 10 years ago or whatever it was. And the big takeaway from that movie was that, not that movie, that book was that it's all of it has already occurred and we're watching a playback right now. So that we're all back with God. Source, whatever you want to call it, and it's all over. And what we're experiencing now is a playback of what had occurred. Is that right? Because you've read it more recently than I have.
That is one of the main points that it's making. And when this thing happened to me in the summer, and I never remember dates ever, but it happened on September 4th because I just looked at my phone as it was happening, and I was like, "Wow, I'm going to remember this day forever." You know, as that was happening, and then I lost it, and then I actually reread that book, The Disappearance of the Universe, was like, wow, maybe I can find this again. I can, because once you know what the truth is, and then you lose that you lose it, and you try to get back to that feeling, it is the most awful thing imaginable. And so I was like scrambling to go, like, how can I get back there? So I reread that book because I remember how much you loved it. I'm like, wow, this is really not happening, but the real takeaway now is like, I just can live in forgiveness and then everything would be okay. Because that's what the main thing, of Course in Miracles is, where that book comes from. And one of the main points is,
yeah,
everything is an illusion and it's all forgiveness. But then I was like, all right, I'm going to forgive the whole world. And then I was like walking around, and what happened was, instead of, I felt good for, let's say, 5 hours, but then I was looking for things to forgive. And then I said, I don't know if I really can live this way. It's starting to feel very negative. Nothing against the book or the author, because it's totally Course in Miracles and people love it and I get it. But it stopped working for me. So from there, I went on to every other possibility of, maybe I'll just live in gratitude. Maybe I'll just live this way. Maybe I'll live with not thinking. And then I'm like, you know what? Absolutely no mental states can be maintained, no matter how, like, it's so great that it helped you, like, during your divorce. And I remember when you told me, I was going through 5 things at the same time, and it really helped me out in that moment. I didn't have to read it. Just you telling me, like, this is what the book's about, I'm like, oh, I already feel better, but I'll read it anyway.
Right.
And it really helped me out, and I was so grateful. But then the best thing that ever happened to me was that I got this, in quotes, enlightenment, and then completely lost it, because it made me retrace back to getting there. And as serendipities go, it happened yesterday, which was like the final day, because I could not have gotten to like a lower, you know, I have new books coming out and I have friends and I'm happy and my family and whatever, but underneath all of that, it's kind of miserable. Mm-hmm. And then I was just searching and striving and searching and striving. And then, like, maybe it's just, and I just said, you know what? It's like that Disappearance of the Universe book. I cannot maintain any state. And that's when I got to, wow, we're really just not in control. And then everything clicked back in. So that's how it all happened. So I'm happy you brought that book up, because that was one of the major points. Like, I just need to live in forgiveness. I just need to live in love. I just need to, like, you can't. Your brain kind of like gives you the finger and says, yeah, you're going to live in gratitude. let me show you 40 billion things not to be grateful for right this second.
Of course.
It's like the back door of your brain opens up, and it's just, it's kind of like, it's not really like surrender, because that kind of feels a little bit kind of like weak. Like, all right, I'm just going to give up and let the world happen. I'm just like, wow, we really just, I'm not in control, and it's okay. It's just cool. And I'll just keep on being me, because that's the way I'm being pushed to be. Like, I'm just going to keep on picking up garbage on the beach when I see it, because it's the right thing to do.
You know, it's so funny, because when I share with people that I only know two people that have kind of that sustained enlightenment, and Ash is one of them, and my friend Satori is the other one. That,
now three, by the way, just so you know.
What? A three.
Now it's three.
Now it's three. But you're, I don't know, like you, they're different than you are. And the reason why that,
thank God for them.
You've only had it for 24 hours,
right?
But they are like, they're so wide-eyed, open, like nothing phases them. Nothing aggravates them ever. They're so non-judgmental. They're so blissed out all the time.
Yeah, I used to pray to be exactly like that, but now I realize that that's not why I'm here, because
that's not your personality either.
Right. And that's great for people. Like, some people need to feel that from other people, but I can't, if I'm walking around blissed out, there's no way that I can ever pass that on to anybody else. Like, if I said, listen, I know exactly what it's like to be riddled with anxiety attacks. Like, I live there. So let me tell you how I got out of it. And let me tell you how I'm still functioning as a normal human being, but kind of like behind that, there's a little bit of bliss. Like, I'm grateful that I'm not that happy, as insane as that sounds.
No, I agree.
Because there's no way, like, I can be relate.
Live that way.
Right. I can't relate to my readers if I'm just in this magical cloud, which would be so nice not to ever have to worry again about who's, you know, calling me back or something. But it's I need to be, the only reason why I write, and I know you know the way I write, is just someone can see themselves in it. So I only talk about myself, but only so everyone else can be like, oh my God, I see that. That's me.
Yeah.
So if I can't, if I'm so blissed out and happy, what am I going to write about?
You're
well,
not
today.
Very relatable.
Right.
Although they are relatable. It's just different. The other book that has been very poignant in my life lately, and 20 people told me to read it, and I finally read it, was The Untethered Soul.
I've picked it up a million times in the bookstore, and I open up a page, and I always put it down. And I don't know why it doesn't resonate with me.
Well, you know what resonated with me? The last three chapters.
Okay, so I'll just read those last three.
Just go read the last three chapters, and those blew me away. And
tell me why.
Well, there was something that I was going through a time of anxiety the last few months ago, just with a work thing. And I was waking up with a 4 a.m. loop, you know, in my head, and I couldn't go back to sleep. And it was a tough, like, month for me. And I've stumbled on that. No, I didn't stumble on the book. I had the book, and I finally just, like, opened it up. And there was a way that he was able to explain the perspective of the witness, you know, you being the witness of your mind, that, and now I feel so inarticulate as I'm speaking to you. And I actually was able to articulate this in a class that I taught, but right now I'm not doing
very well. But I think that kind of makes sense, because when you hear something that's so otherworldly, it's often like tough to relate it. And one of my favorite things that Eckhart Tolle ever said ever is, he's talking at a retreat, and he said, if you go away today thinking that you learned something that you can explain it to somebody else, you completely didn't get it. But if you walk away here completely confused, you got it.
Yes. There you go. There it is. So there I am. And it was like that. And I just, the light bulb went off, and I could see for the very first time it was about, really, consciousness. It was about beingness and not being, you know, attached to these thoughts, right? That they were just thoughts and not being attached to them. So it was that whole piece. But then in the last, second to last chapter, he talks about it, and I believe it's a Buddhist practice, that the way you were talking about the choice to just be grateful or forgive everything, this was the choice to just be happy. And he writes in the book, well, what if my wife leaves me? Then I'm not going to be happy then. Well, you could choose to be happy still, even if your wife left you. Well, what if my dog died? And then I'm not going to be happy when my dog died. Well, you could be also choose to be happy, even if your dog died. Not that your dog died, but you could still be happy even if your dog died. So this choice of choosing to be happy. And I think his definition of happiness is very probably similar to Thich Nhat Hanh, which was another great day of mine when I learned that happiness doesn't mean to be this like giggly, blissful, you know, jumping up and down thing. That happy is just almost, you know, in the same level of just being at peace, just being happy, right?
Right. And that actually, sorry.
You could choose that. That's it. That's all.
Well, that kind of happened to me the other day. I was not, like, before my thankful reawakening yesterday, when I was driving around and I just wasn't, it was beautiful outside and I just wasn't feeling connected. And I was just feeling awful about nothing, but I felt it. And I was like, why can't I just choose my way out of this? Like, this is, And I was thinking that, well, you know, maybe I'll just, I know gratefulness is not something that I can be maintained, but right in this moment, I'm just going to be like, I'm just going to point my attention to something that I just appreciate. And I'm just, for the first time, I'm not going to do it to try to become happy. I'm not going to do it to try to like fend off like sadness. I'm just going to do it because I have nothing else to do right this moment except just allow myself to feel grateful. And what happened was I was walking around this cute little town and I'm feeling all down and schlumpy. And then I was looking at little things to just, all right, well, that's sweet. And that's nice. And look at those, you know, look at that little dog and those people are holding hands and those flowers are cool. And I just like, all right, you're not doing this to be happy. You're just doing it. But the crazy thing is that I learned finally that you cannot force yourself to feel grateful and then feel happy because of it. You can, that gratefulness and that happiness, like as a result from like some sort of like doing action of like, to look at something beautiful, not with the goal of being happy, but just to do it. And then I was thinking about it. And of course I had to start writing about it because that's who I am. And I said to myself, it's kind of like the universe appreciating itself. Like that's this purpose that you're serving. And then like the byproduct might be some happiness or some joy or some, you know, just inner gratefulness that just comes from it. Like this gratefulness, like I appreciate this flower, but then there's that gratefulness underneath. It's like, wow, I'm just grateful just to be here right this moment. And that's kind of what happened.
Wow. Using these interesting tools to just get us, you know, back.
Right.
Back
and
to...
when you boil it down after so many years of looking and looking, and looking, it's actually pretty simple. And that's why I don't understand a lot of books, not like Untethered, but like, here's the 42 steps of feeling grateful. It's like, no, I'm just going to feel grateful, but thank you.
Well, it's almost like love looks like this. It's like life looks like this, you know, and that it can't be summed up in 12 steps. It's just in this photograph.
Right, exactly. Like just open your eyes for a little bit.
Yeah, it's just in this very simple sentence. In this moment, you know, like that is the all-encompassing of enlightenment.
Right. Just imagine being in love. Like, forget about, I once wrote that, you know, I thought I was looking for enlightenment, but the truth is I was just looking for what the movie Garden State always makes me feel like. And it's that feeling of being so like, almost like beaten down to the point where there's nothing left, but like, all right, fine. I'm just in love with everything. Like it's so awful out there. So I'm just going to be so loving and I don't care how it's received or whatever. Like, I'm just going to love you. I'm sorry. Like, and that's what I was looking for. It was like that feeling that when Garden State is over or when you're finished watching Good Will Hunting, you're like, oh, this, although it's just a movie, and here's our movie reference again, it's just, this is really what it's like. It's not about the nonsense. It's really just about like how your heart feels. And that's what I was looking for. So I can say that, oh, now, you know, three enlightened people, but the truth is like, I'm not one of them. I just got so boiled down to the point, like, this is what I have left. Like, this is what love looks like.
It's so funny that you're saying all this, because in my Facebook post to promote the show, I wrote, "You will love Gabe. He's like a good film, funny, touching, and poignant." And you give me that feeling of that Good Will Hunting, like who you are. Well, isn't that funny?
That
I wrote that?
Absolute ultimate compliment I've ever gotten in my life. So thank you so much.
You are Garden State.
Because that's what I want to do with my writing. Like I absorb something and then I just kind of push it out in a different form so somebody else can absorb it. Instead of like, well, I'm just going to rewrite Garden State. Like I'll tell you how I feel about Garden State so you can feel your own life in a different way.
Yeah.
Or through different eyes or through like different color glasses. You know what you were saying before about, you were in a dark place for a month and then you read this and it really... I used to listen to radio shows like this and read books like this and say, oh, I was so grateful for that worst thing that ever happened to me. Like I was in World War II and this guy exploded. I'm like, you're grateful for that? You're an idiot. But now I completely get it, because I don't know if I've ever said this publicly on the air before, but a couple of months, like when my dad was dying, I'll tell everybody, he had brain cancer. It took 11 months for him to finally release. And I was completely fine the whole time. Like everyone else in my family were panicked and beaten down, and I was just so positive and always there. And I didn't sleep for 11 months. And I literally slept like 1 hour a day, and I was always just with him and always just joking around. And not that I was trying to put on this front, like I was convinced that he was going to beat the unbeatable, but obviously he didn't. And then 6 months later, out of nowhere, I woke up and my pulse was like at 144. And this is when you and I first started talking.
Yep.
And I thought that I had some awful like heart disease or cancer.
That's right. I remember
months
that.
And months and months later. And I remember talking to you every night, like I am dying. And you're like, just go to the doctor. Like I was too scared to go to the doctor. Yeah. Like I was just done.
Was it the 17 cups of coffee you were drinking? What was it?
It was, and that was 17 cups of coffee before noon. So I had no clue what was going on. So I finally forced myself to go to the doctor, and you know, you're in trouble when the doctor looks at you and gives you an EKG because she thinks you've had a heart attack in the last 5 days. And that's exactly what happened to me. But my EKG was totally fine. So a couple of days later, she couldn't find anything wrong with me. And she's like, you have to come into my office. And she said, well, you know what happens with soldiers when then I'm like, are you about to tell me that I have post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yeah.
And post-traumatic, is that what I said? Yeah. And I now, it was the most, I mean, thankfully it's no big deal, but it's not like dying of leukemia, but it was awful for me. And I had to go on medicine and all of these things happened. And I was thinking like, here I am, this like spiritual writer on anxiety medicine. Like it doesn't, and now talking to you, I see the whole bigger picture like the movie script. And I am so grateful for that awfulness, because now I can talk about it and tell people like, hey, I know what it's like to be completely riddled with anxiety, and I'm not going to go tell you to just go do the 52 steps and, or just go forgive people. And I thought that I would look at myself in a mirror every night and say, if I can just get through this and not die, then I'm going to live in such gratefulness. But I've proven that you can't just do these things. Like you need to kind of just really let go. And that's where this thing came from. So what you were saying, like when you were saying, oh, I had this thing happen for a month, I'm like, I'm sure you're so happy about it now, because now you can relate more to people. And that's what this is all about.
Right.
It's like, we're all connected, so let's just kind of like relate to each other.
Yeah, I thought to myself, my best workshop that I had ever presented from my own horrific experience, I was able to be on the other side of it, you know, because I'm here, I'm a coach, and since my divorce, which has almost been, I think it's been 10 years now, I haven't suffered any financial anxiety. I haven't been through, you know, I've been through a breakup or two, but, you know, like pretty good breakups, I would have to say, and great friendships still with those people. And now I'm madly in love, and I have this really blessed life. And so I was grateful for it. So I was like, I can relate to everybody's anxiety, and you can't stop the obsessive thinking. And no, don't just tell them to do this, because that shit doesn't work. You know, like I really got it, and I had to go much deeper, which is why I was so grateful for The Untethered Soul. Like it really had my thinking go a lot more beyond the surface of the practical tool. I'm always like, here's a tool. And I know that my tools are great and I know they help people. But there was this other perspective that I was able to understand and articulate like I'm not able to do right now, probably because I don't have my notes in front of me, but I was able to really open people's eyes. And it was great. It was great to be able to do that. But more importantly, my question to you, my dear, is coming back to this fate versus destiny. If there is this bigger thing that's happening and we're all connected and it's all just happening, whatever, random or it's fated, or so what do you do now? You know, here I am, I'm creating my reality, I'm creating intentions, I have goals and dreams, and I love those things, although I do less and less of that now, which is interesting. I used to be very articulate and methodical in my directing of my destiny, and now it's more like essence, you know, like, oh, I would love to just have new exciting creative projects, you know, and I would love to express myself or this or that, and then totally handing over reins of like, now, you know, bring whatever needs to come my way. So it's a lot looser, but I still am, you know, pretty directive with my life. And so what do you just do nothing? Do you just, what do you do? It's like confusing.
Well, normally, once again, it's like you asked me a question. I'm like, normally I would say, but
since before yesterday, what I would say,
I'd say the beautiful thing is there's nothing you can do about it. So it just really doesn't matter. It's just going
right
to happen.
Either whatever you do, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Do you think it's all going to, like, there's a kid born in Africa, there's a kid born in America, right? And it doesn't matter what they do, their lives are already predestined. Is that what you're saying?
Well,
or that it's just random?
I don't know if it's predestined, and I don't think anyone can tell you that. The way I look at it, like you, is it's all a movie script. And let's say right now this conversation's having on page 137, and you're asking this character, Gabe, like, what's happening next? Like, what do I do? So if we can peek at 138, it might be completely blank. But it might already be filled in. There's absolutely no way for us to know. So if you're flipping right that page over, like, I would swear in my life that the universe is choreographed, but I don't know if it's choreographed as soon as the Big Bang happened or choreographed as the second it's happening or the millisecond that it's happening or whatever, smaller than a millisecond. There's absolutely no way to know. And that's why I think you also have to be very weary of teachers and writers and people and gurus and masters who say like, oh, it's all preordained or it's none of it's preordained, because there's no way for anyone to know. There's absolutely no way. And then it also goes back to, it just doesn't matter. It's kind of like going back to, you know, this book that I once read about this guy talking about free will, and he said, it's really impossible just to do nothing and go try it. Like, go just try to lay in bed for the rest of your life. Your body will push you out of bed. It is just going to happen. So I used to be nervous about that too. Like, when this first happened to me on September 4th, it's like, well, now what? I don't know what to do now. Like, there's no, but what happened is I just kept on walking back to my, where I had my keys on the beach, and I picked it up and I went on my merry way, and I ended up talking to people and had lunch. Like, the universe has never been stumped. Like, everything could be looked at in different ways. Like, there's awfulness out there and there's greatness out there and there's terrorism and there's love, but the universe has never been stumped. It's not like you're going to say like, all right, you know what, I'm done. And then you're just going to fall down. Like, going back to what you said about being Byron Katie, my favorite line from her is, you're not breathing, you're being breathed. Like, your intelligence and your decisions doesn't need to be there. You're still going to exist perfectly. And you might not find yourself fighting with your mom the way you normally would, but because you know that it's ridiculous, but you'll still go on existing and you might actually get sweeter. The crazy thing about this, and I'm so happy you asked me because I never would have thought of saying this. After my September 4th thing happened and I knew what the answer was, and I had a couple of glimpses about it, I would have meetings with somebody and I'd be really nervous about it. And in the back of my brain, like, Gabe, this is choreographed. We have no way which way it's going to go. We don't know. But just know going into it that whatever is going to come out of your mouth is going to be your best case scenario. So just don't even worry about it. And every single time I did that, every single time, it went so much better than I ever could have imagined it.
You know, it's so interesting. We're creating our summer plans right now. And it's just like the God laughs when you start making plans. Like right. I was on this path and going to North Carolina with a group of friends for 10 days. And then the next thing you know, I'm in the pool with another dear friend and she's inviting us to her compound in Sweden where my mother whole family lives and we've never been. And I call my mother and now we're going to Sweden and we find out that you know, you think you're directing all this and it's just, it's happening for you. It's just happening. And now we can't fly into there because the direct flight's in Copenhagen. So now we're going for 5 days in Copenhagen before. And I've never decided that I was going to go to Copenhagen. And now I'm going to be there, you know? So it's just this, and I'm allowing it to all just unfold. And I know that whenever I think I'm making a decision, like I don't get caught up in, is it going to be the right or wrong decision? Because I'm out there and it's already been made for me. I just need to live into it. And I have always thought that way, which is kind of all of this.
But that still is beautiful as that is. It doesn't negate what you say in your book about directing your own movie and directing your destiny, because your book is going to get into someone's hands who needs to see it, and that's why it's in their hands. Like, the proof that that person needs to read it is right there because they're reading it. Like, that's the only proof that I need. And even though there might be something, and I believe that there is, behind all of it, like, directing this for the directors, like, there's actually, like, we're all maybe just assistant directors, and there's actually a director.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. Like, now that person has it in their soul or their framework or their DNA or in their minds or whatever, like, it's okay for me to not worry about what my spouse thinks of me. I'm going to go do this anyway.
Right.
And on that note,
it's time. Can you believe the show is over?
Beautiful.
Hopefully you all can buy up all of Gabe's books, but especially Love Looks Like This
on Amazon. And everyone can always email me or find me at Facebook, Gabe Berman at gmail.com.
Thanks, Gabe. Thank you, everybody.